The business-level application of the breakthrough strategy focuses primarily on making significant improvements to the informational and economic systems used to steer the business. Systems that measure customer feedback and supplier quality are examples of business-level systems that influence business focus. Without customer feedback or supplier performance systems, it would be impossible to effectively achieve breakthrough performance. To achieve breakthrough at the business level requires a consistent and focused application of the breakthrough strategy at the business systems level for 3 to 5 years. The executive leadership's role in applying the breakthrough strategy is as follows. Recognize the true states of your business. Define what plans must be in place to realize improvement of each state. Measure the business systems that support the plans. Analyze the gaps in system performance benchmarks. Improve system elements to achieve performance goals. Control system-level characteristics that are critical to value. Standardize the systems that prove to be best in class. Integrate best-in-class systems into the strategic planning framework. Let's go through these one at a time. Recognize the true states of your business. A business state describes global business conditions created by the systems used to guide and manage a business. These underlying systems have the ability to independently or interactively impact the top and bottom line economics of a business. Once management begins to measure their business states, they can begin to improve. Again, companies cannot improve what they do not measure. When the measurement is fuzzy, so are the improvement efforts. Companies first need to identify the various states of their business before they can be measured. As mentioned earlier, customer satisfaction is a reflection on the state of the business and depends on three things. 1. Delivering a defect-free product or service. 2. Delivering a product or service on schedule. And 3. Delivering a product or service at the lowest possible cost. Each of these three elements can be translated into systems. For example, the delivery of a defect-free product or service depends on how companies measure quality. On-time delivery of a product or service requires a sound material acquisition system, as well as a reliable scheduling system. Delivering a product or service at the lowest cost requires good accounting systems, management systems, and so on. In other words, most business states are virtually inseparable from a company's business systems. Many organizations conduct customer satisfaction surveys and use this information to create simple bar charts and frequency tables that display at a glance which options were most frequently selected for each question. While this kind of analysis allows companies to see the state of the customer, or how pleased he is with their products and services, it provides minimal understanding on how to improve low scores and transplant the success factors behind high scores. Companies that lack the capability to explore and analyze data are forced to read between the lines and draw superficial and sometimes inaccurate conclusions. Because they cannot properly mine the data, they cannot see how the various dimensions of customer satisfaction correlate to the business systems used to create, deliver, and support their products and services. In other words, the surveys they use can prohibit or restrict the cross-correlation of customer data to their business systems. Because they cannot fully determine the true state of their system capability, they are unable to forecast their ability to improve customer satisfaction. Let's say a company has carefully authored a customer survey for a particular product or service that will allow it to statistically trace the level of satisfaction to one or more of its business systems. Through analysis of the data, a company might find that low customer satisfaction can be attributed to some aspect of the engineering system, rather than the manufacturing system. Knowing this, a company can leverage its management efforts and business resources to find the seemingly elusive state of total customer satisfaction. Next concern. What plans must be in place to begin the improve stage? Once companies have defined and characterized the various states of the business, they can begin to creatively think about how to achieve a higher level of performance. If they discover that they do not know how customer satisfaction relates to key business systems, they can initiate plans to find out. Companies might ask, does the customer's experience best correlate to our manufacturing capability, design capability, and/or service capability? A company needs to formulate the right questions and develop a strategic plan to guide it while it pursues these answers. For example, let's suppose that Company X wants total customer satisfaction, and it knows its engineering systems are a key element in customer satisfaction. If it discovers that its customer satisfaction scores are low, the company needs to develop a strategic plan to increase its engineering systems capability. Asking the right questions and implementing a strategic plan requires that each system be well-defined and accountable. Next, measure the business systems that support the plans. This step often appears to be much easier than it actually is. While the idea of measuring is eloquently simple, we have consistently seen companies encounter three obstacles when attempting to measure. The first obstacle is knowing what to measure. The second obstacle is knowing how to measure. The third, and perhaps most formidable obstacle, is gaining executive commitment to go after the right measurements. An industrial example of this is engineering systems capability, where product design capability is one facet. Product design capability is the ability of a product or process design to meet the customer's requirements, conform to internal cost and timing constraints, and be manufacturable and robust using existing process technologies. Let's say we've discovered that we must measure five key elements in order to establish product design capability. We must measure our ability to 1. Meet or exceed customer requirements and expectations. 2. Be at or below the hard costs target. 3. Meet or exceed established engineering schedules. 4. Achieve consistently high process yields. And 5. Tolerate normal process variations during production. Once companies overcome the obstacle of defining what to measure, they can determine how to measure these elements. Let's look at the first element, meet or exceed customer requirements and expectations. To measure this aspect of product design ability, we must establish some performance metrics. In this case, we will determine 1. The percent of engineering drawings in which the critical to quality characteristics have been identified. 2. The percent of critical to quality characteristics that have been analyzed using Six Sigma methods. 3. The percent of critical to quality characteristics that have been analyzed and statistically optimized. 4. The percent of optimized critical to quality characteristics that perform at 5 sigma or higher. And 5. The percent of 5 sigma critical to quality characteristics that are robust to normal variations in process centering. These five performance metrics are hierarchically linked together and can be transformed to the sigma scale of measure. As stated earlier, the final obstacle is achieving the executive leadership's commitment to obtaining these measurements. Perhaps the best way to generate this support is by example, taking a few measurements, creating the benchmarks, and sharing the results. Benchmarking, for example, can set the stage for new questions, which in turn can motivate the executive leadership towards common action. Now it's time to analyze the gaps in system performance benchmarks. Once a company has measured its business systems, knows its capabilities, and has linked the capability measurements to the various states of the business, it is ready to diagnose capability measures and assess the performance gaps. For example, if a company discovers that the typical customer requirements for one of its key products or services is operating at a 3.4 sigma level, and that a similar product or service generated by another business operates at a 4.6 sigma level, it would then analyze the gap to uncover what the 3.4 sigma process business does differently than the 4.6 sigma process business. Why does one perform better than the other? Once this secret is uncovered, the company can transfer the knowledge and/or technology to its own business. Suppose a manufacturer of large-scale transformers discovers through customer surveys that customers are dissatisfied with the company's speed and competency in responding to complaints. The company's response is to create a strategic plan that would improve customer satisfaction by focusing on the complaint process within the customer service system. It measures the customer service system and finds that it operates on average at a 3.9 sigma level, and the complaint process of the system operates at a 3.7 sigma level. Nonetheless, it also discovers that the critical to quality characteristic called complaint response time is at a 3.2 sigma level, well below average. If the company is to improve the overall system, it must close the gap with respect to the complaint process, which in turn will require the company to substantially improve the sigma level of the response time. But suppose that in small-scale transformers, the company discovers that the critical-to-quality characteristic called complaint response time is higher, say 4.3 sigma capable. In this case, the company would have one segment of the business performing far better than others with respect to the same critical-to-quality characteristic. Let's say that this company benchmarks several external businesses with similar systems, subsystems, or processes, and finds that one of these external businesses has a complaint process that operates at 5.3 sigma. Given this, the company would realize that its internal level of entitlement, the level it should achieve, is at least 4.3 sigma, and that it could achieve a sigma level as high as 5.3 sigma. It becomes obvious that the company's next step should be to improve the system elements that limit overall system performance, thus improving critical-to-quality characteristic sigma level and customer satisfaction. Improving any aspect of a business system is a fairly straightforward task. Let's look at a quality information system. This type of system is used as a repository for the data on defects collected from all of the processes within an organization. Obviously, a company should refer to this database to understand the root causes of problems. Unfortunately, most quality information systems fall short of this capability, producing too little data, too late, and at too high a cost. Before a company can improve a system, it must define its measuring system. To start, the company could make a list of analytical and reporting requirements the system must be able to produce. Then it could create a measurement instrument much like a customer satisfaction survey that uses a comprehensive screening system. Once the measurement has been put to use and the necessary data collected, it could analyze the data and prioritize various efforts at improvement. Let's assume that the biggest problem is related to the system's inability to collect information from the database in a way that shows how different financial data affects the materials planning system. If the company could solve this problem, it would know which types of quality problems are most related to labor costs, scheduling bottlenecks, missed shipments, and so on. This type of problem can be solved by a black belt and support team reporting to a champion or master black belt, and the resources necessary to fix this type of problem are minimal when compared with the dividends. Thus, you have to control system-level characteristics that are critical to value. The quality information system provides an example of a system-level critical-to-value characteristic, the system's ability to collect data in a way that can be easily used. The elements used to create the solution need to be monitored over a period of time. If a black belt discovered that a demographic field within a quality information system called the date of data collection was present, but saw that the system did not possess any type of select-if capability, the system will not be able to create and summarize time-bounded intervals, which would match the time intervals used by the accounting system and material acquisition system. There would be no apples-to-apples file structure to match that of other database systems. If the black belt is able to structure the database so that comparative analysis can be done, then the black belt can identify the system-level characteristics which must be monitored and controlled over time to ensure that the database can work in conjunction with other databases. To do this, black belts may need to reconduct the survey at periodic intervals to ensure that the quality information system customers are continually able to cross-correlate data and information. In other words, the black belt's principal control mechanisms would be regular system-level audits. Next, standardize the systems that prove to be best in class. Building on our quality information system example, once the critical-to-value characteristics have been identified, characterized, optimized, and properly controlled, the optimal performance of the quality information system can be compared with similar systems. In this case, the company may find that the black belt solution to a problem is so effective that other strategic business units should follow suit. When this is the case, the company can standardize the improved quality information system across the company to capitalize on the potential savings from the black belt's efforts. While standardization can occur in many ways, the common denominator seems to be how technology is transferred. It is one thing to discover which quality information system is best in class, and quite another to adopt it. When the change involves time and money, many executives are slow to act, particularly when their bonuses are affected by the proposed change. Then, integrate best-in-class systems into the strategic planning framework. Many times, companies have difficulty getting the organization to adopt and use a new or improved best-in-class system. The psychology of this behavior is discussed in greater detail later, where we'll look at several steps management can take to diminish or sidestep resistance to change. First, the executive leadership must fold new or improved systems into the strategic plan of the business in such a way that it becomes critical to achieve new immediate or long-range business aims, goals, objectives, and targets. When this is done, the organization's thinking begins to move forward and an internal debate will take place. A reasonable period of debate is crucial if the change is to be adequately institutionalized. Second, the success of the Six Sigma initiative must be strongly tied to the company's compensation. When bonuses or stock options are based on Six Sigma improvements, change can be better managed during and after deployment. Regardless of the methods used, Six Sigma must be incorporated into the strategic planning framework to ensure that accountability is well established and the resources required to promote change are allocated in a timely fashion. Critical thinking and systems diagnostics are key to implementing Six Sigma at the business level. Executives must begin to reason and think statistically in order to create breakthrough at the business level. They can no longer afford to guide their companies based on economic indicators, intuition, and experience. Six Sigma is not just for black belts. It is a business process that helps companies re-examine the way in which the work gets done. Rather than tweaking the system, they learn to re-examine how the business support systems function and how they interact with other systems. Six Sigma offers a way to work smarter in a world where we are often forced to work harder and longer. Let's move on to the breakthrough strategy at the operation level. Many of us have heard an operations manager say that he or she has an issue with that. While we may understand what the manager means in general, the use of the word issue masks something deeper and more convoluted. We believe that an operational issue, such as a quality issue, is simply a collection of higher-level problems and potential solutions that become confounded. Once companies recognize that an issue is really a set of interrelated problems, they can begin to decompose the issue into its components. Only when this is done can a company begin to adequately define problems, formulate plans, and take positive actions. The manager's or project champion's role in applying the breakthrough strategy is as follows. The steps should seem familiar in form. Recognize operational issues that link to key business systems. Define Six Sigma projects to resolve operational issues. Measure performance of the Six Sigma projects. Analyze project performance in relation to operational goals. Improve the Six Sigma project management system. Control inputs to the project management system. Standardize best-in-class management system practices. Integrate standardized Six Sigma practices into policies and procedures. Once again, we'll take these one at a time. Recognize operational issues that link to key business systems. Often the tactical solution to an operational issue is masked by the underlying support system. The system itself can blind companies to operational issues that are persistent and predictable. Persistent and predictable problems are easily masked by the architecture or operating constraints and requirements of the support system. Companies are often quite good at firefighting sporadic problems or picking the low-hanging fruit. However, the sweetest fruit is always at the top of the tree. The ability to reach that fruit requires companies to classify their operational issues into two categories: those issues that are systems dependent and those that are not. Only then can companies reduce the number of sporadic operational issues that plague the business. To better understand this, consider a factory or service unit that experiences a low end-of-line yield. In order to work the issue, we have four basic options. The first is to ignore the issue and help it eventually resolve itself, an unlikely occurrence. The second is the hunt-and-peck method, where businesses twist the knobs, hoping they will stumble on the one that will make the quality issues disappear. The third approach is statistical, rather than tactical and tool-driven. This approach relies on using well-established quality problem-solving methods and tools, such as Pareto charts, failure mode effects analysis, design of experiments, statistical process control charts, and so on. However, this approach is a posteriori, or after the fact, by nature. Those charged with reducing defects must wait for them to occur before there is sufficient data and information to take definitive action. Companies are trying to resolve issues that no longer exist in real time and space. Returning to our quality information system illustration, the effectiveness of the company's problem-solving methods and tools is largely governed by the limits of quality information systems to provide the relevant data. In this case, the system does not offer access to the types of data needed for a priori or before-the-fact analysis. While applying the tools might solve an array of problems, because the problems are sporadic in time and nature, they will reappear. So while improvements will occur and specific problems will be solved, quality remains an issue and the overall sigma level of an operation remains constant. The fourth approach to resolving quality issues is more tactical. In the quality information system illustration, the persistent nature of the recurring quality issues could be better resolved by installing an in-process quality measurement system that connects to the end-of-line system. This connection provides the business with an overall quality system far more capable of forecasting sporadic end-of-line defects before they occur. This also allows the business to statistically correlate in-process events and phenomena to end-of-line results. Although a business may not always be able to predict the specific number or kinds of defects, the goal is to forecast the onset of quality-related problems. This allows the business to get in front of the issues. It also provides a way to more effectively focus and utilize the inherent power of statistical tools and better leverage the knowledge base of the workforce. With this approach, underlying problems can be uncovered and dealt with in real time and space. Businesses are positioned to take action on the process rather than taking action on the product or service. Again, we call this a priori action, or action before the fact. While marginal improvement can be made by taking action after the fact, breakthrough improvements require action before the process begins. It's at this point that a business can begin to fully leverage its black belts. Six Sigma projects are identified and selected based on certain criteria, such as 1, the extent of cost savings to be realized, 2, the degree to which an operational issue is connected to larger critical-to-quality issues, 3, the degree to which an operational issue is connected to the efficient and effective operation of a business support system, and 4, the expected length of time necessary to resolve a specific problem or issue. Business leadership must select projects carefully in order to retain focus and momentum toward achieving Six Sigma goals and objectives. While there is no model criterion, one common factor is money, setting specific and hard financial targets. In most cases, focusing on financial targets necessarily involves operational issues in business systems. When businesses focus on reducing defects for the sake of improving quality alone, they seldom see significant improvements to operational issues and virtually never improve the underlying business support systems. Six Sigma projects should focus on resolving operational issues, since these issues inevitably directly or indirectly impact bottom-line profitability. Many times an organization's leadership will want to focus on its biggest and toughest problems. Labeling these problems as projects can be seductive. But the greater the scope and depth of an issue or problem, the greater the number of black belts, resources, and time needed to properly apply the breakthrough strategy. If black belts are not properly trained or are too few in number to adequately tackle the job, and if resources are scarce, black belts can become discouraged, management will suffer disappointment, and problems will persist. It is much more realistic to see these kinds of projects as long-term projects and to break the larger problems down into smaller, more manageable projects. The next concern is measuring the performance of Six Sigma projects. Businesses must quantitatively gauge how well projects are doing in both an absolute and relative sense. In other words, they must see the specific benefits provided by the projects, individually and collectively, as well as how those benefits stack up against the company's performance goals. They must regularly review or monitor a project's progress and assess how well a project is doing. To do this, businesses need to establish project metrics and specific performance goals. This can be done using a standard survey to regularly assess things such as morale levels among black belts, as well as to determine what restraints they are experiencing that keep them from even higher levels of performance. The business might also measure and track the total number of projects undertaken and what phase each project is in. Businesses might track the yield of black belt and green belt projects, or the percentage of the forecast achieved. In this sense, the rolled throughput yield would represent the probability that all projects will achieve their respective targets. The list of things to measure is endless, and it is governed only by our business needs and creative thinking. Measuring project performance requires the collection and analysis of data. To do this, businesses need a project tracking system that is capable of slicing and dicing data in many different ways. Companies must be able to hierarchically pool data to the appropriate business levels. Then there must be attention to analyzing project performance at the operational level. Evaluating project performance may seem simpler than it is. It entails far more than looking at the black belt project and comparing actual savings with projected savings. It also involves comparing the performance of a number of black belt projects with the operational goals of the business. For example, if one of the operational goals is to reduce cycle time across the board 10%, management would want to know what percentage of black belt projects exceeded the larger operational goal. Management might also want to investigate the relationship between cycle time and quality. They might ask, what proportion of our cycle time improvements can be explained by defect reduction projects? If the operational goal is to reduce the cycle time, and a large portion of the cycle time improvements can be explained by defect reductions, then management may want to shift the focus from cycle time projects to defect reduction projects. This leads to improving the Six Sigma project management system. Once management has successfully translated the key operational issues into black belt projects and instituted a project management tracking system, they are ready to improve and refine the system. Let's say a business has been tracking the project savings within and across business units. At this point, it might want to correlate project cost forecasts to the actual project costs. Or management might want to track other variables, such as net savings, project scope, project completion time, and so on. By tracking the right data, it is possible to build a statistically based prediction model that allows a business to adjust its project selection criteria to maximize outcomes. There are many other elements of the project management system that a business might want to improve. For instance, experience has shown that there is a small but significant fallout of black belts in an organization pursuing Six Sigma. With proper planning and analysis, the reasons for this fallout could be uncovered and system-level changes instituted to reduce the fallout. As an organization moves forward with the implementation and deployment of Six Sigma, the identification and realization of such system improvements will occur naturally. Next, you must control the project management system. Once a business has discovered the key inputs to an effective and efficient project management system, it must institute regular system audits. Standards must be established and consistently met. Bringing about improvement is one thing. Sustaining it is often more difficult and requires greater diligence. Now, standardized, best-in-class management system practices. Standardization at the operations level is no different from standardization at the business level. Once the business has uncovered a best-in-class management practice, it should seek to standardize it and transfer the knowledge to all relevant sectors within the business. If the black belt retention within one business is at 4.6 sigma, but falls below 4.0 sigma in other businesses, practices and policies pertaining to black belts in the 4.6 sigma business would be studied and standardized into the other businesses. A business might discover that the black belt retention rate of a dissimilar profession outside its business is at 5.2 sigma. The best-in-class practices of the other business can be investigated and applied, allowing the company to leapfrog its way to a higher retention rate. Once a company has standardized a particular Six Sigma practice, it must integrate the practice into the fabric of its operations, reinforcing it through reward and recognition systems. Finally, you can turn to integrating standardized Six Sigma practices into policies and procedures. Integration at the operations level is no different from what takes place at the business level. Once a Six Sigma practice is standardized, it must be integrated into the fabric of the operations. Practices become institutionalized when their cross-applicability is interwoven into operating policies and procedures, and then reinforced through reward and recognition systems. Finally, let's look at the breakthrough strategy at the process level. Black belts focus on processes, working to recognize poor processes that result in warranty problems, functional problems, high labor costs, poor supplier quality, and form, fit, and function errors and defects. Like those at the business and operations level, black belts discover what methods correct problems, then standardize those methods to ensure that those problems don't recur. Once these methods become established procedures, they are shared throughout the operation and can even be transferred cross-functionally across the organization. Recognize functional problems that link to operational issues. Define the processes that contribute to the functional problems. Measure the capability of each process that offers operational leverage. Analyze the data to assess prevalent patterns and trends. Improve the key product service characteristics created by the key processes. Control the process variables that exert undue influence. Standardize the methods and processes that produce best-in-class performance. Integrate standard methods and processes into the design cycle. Again, we'll go step by step. Recognize problems that link to operational issues. Let's say that employees executing a billing and charging process are confronted with an operational issue involving the billing cycle for a particular customer. Moreover, the department has not been getting its bills into the mail on schedule. This issue involves several independent but interrelated problems. One of the problems might be related to billing accuracy. Given this, bills that contain errors must be repaired. This means that the department needs additional processing time to detect, analyze, and correct the errors, which can create bottlenecks that increase cycle time and contribute to the fact that bills are consistently sent out late. It's important to understand the hierarchical nature of process problems. Process problems are interconnected to operational issues, which in turn are tied to the support systems that are ultimately linked to business issues such as customer satisfaction, profitability, and shareholder value. Define the processes that contribute to the problem. Functional problems can be classified as one of three basic types: 1, product problems; 2, service-related problems; or 3, transactional problems. All three problems are created by one or more of the processes required to create the product, service, or transaction. All processes consist of a series of steps, events, or activities. Individually, these steps are incapable of creating an outcome. In most cases, they are repetitive by nature and designed to maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of how labor and/or materials are used to deliver a product or service. Too many organizations are complacent in comparing processes. There is a tendency to focus on outcomes rather than the process itself. How often does your organization map its processes? How often are such processes linked to common operational issues and problems? Too many critical processes are never mapped and linked. When the process breaks down sporadically, teams are brought in to correct the problem. But without creating process maps, persistent problems continue unrecognized. By mapping a product or service process, a company can create a data flow map. The company could then see how this information affects accounting, material acquisition, and engineering processes, for example. The very act of mapping a process can lead to improvement. Again, we don't know what we don't know, and we won't know until we search. In order to effectively search, businesses need a map. Now, measure the capability of each process that offers operational leverage. Most organizations fail to recognize the importance of measuring the capability of each process. They do not know the capability of their major process, much less their less visible backroom support processes. A company that cannot express how well a process is performing in the form of a measurement does not understand its processes. If it does not know the capability of a process, it doesn't know the capability of the business. Process capability impacts every aspect of a business. Poor process leads to quality problems. Quality problems, in turn, affect cycle time and inventory. These problems lead to low morale, which in itself can affect process capability. To understand their process capability, businesses must break apart the elements of the process, identifying the critical characteristics, defining and mapping the related processes, understanding the capability of the processes, discovering the weak links, and then upgrading the capability of the processes. It is only by taking these steps that a business can raise the high watermark of its performance. Once a product or service has been broken down into its various elements, the critical-to-quality characteristics become apparent. A critical-to-quality characteristic could be the dimensions of a part in an automobile transmission, dirty windows after your car goes through the car wash, the accuracy of information related to a specific box on an administrative form, or the completeness of data in a computer database. Each of these is critical to quality. Measuring critical to quality characteristics can be a major stumbling block for black belts. They may be assigned a Six Sigma project that looks easy enough from the outside, but due to the age of the measurement apparatus and budget constraints, they may find it difficult to measure and evaluate the necessary processes. It's important to realize that the measure phase of the breakthrough strategy can take more time and resources than was originally anticipated. Our point is simple. If a black belt cannot retrieve good data, it is doubtful that the data will help in the decision-making process. The crucial link between data, information, process metrics, and management decisions will be broken. As I said earlier, process metrics are vital to understanding process performance and capability. Metrics such as throughput yield, rolled throughput yield, defects per unit, and sigma are all measures of process capability. In the analyze phase, data is collected to determine the relationships between the variable factors in the process and to determine the direction of improvements. The analyze phase determines how well, or in many cases how poorly, the process is currently performing and identifies possible root causes of variation in quality. The data analyzed can reveal the basic nature and behavior of the process and show how capable and stable the process is over an extended period of time. These performance metrics also tell what the physical limit of the process capability is if everything goes perfectly. If the inherent capability is poor, the black belt project should be terminated because the black belt will not be able to sufficiently improve the process to warrant the time and expense. However, if the metrics show the potential for improvement, the project can progress to the next phase. Now it's time to improve key characteristics. Once a business realizes that improving a product means improving the process, the central question becomes, how are the key factors in a process identified, defined, optimized, and controlled? It is the job of the black belt to focus on the critical to quality characteristics inherent in a product or service, and then go about improving the capability of such characteristics by screening for variables that have the greatest impact on the processes. As the average critical to quality characteristic capability increases, the capability of the corresponding process increases. In other words, process capability is a function of critical to quality characteristic capability. In order to improve any critical to quality characteristic, black belts must isolate the key variables, establish the limits of acceptable variation, and then control the factors that affect these limits. The capability of any given critical to quality characteristic is the result of such things as machine capability, material capability, human capability, and management capability. For example, capability of any given machine is simply the sum of its mechanical and electrical capabilities. An individual's capability is a reflection of his or her intellectual, physical, emotional, and spiritual capabilities. Using this perspective, businesses should be better able to see how they are affected by the hierarchical nature of interrelationships. The Six Sigma Breakthrough Strategy specifically trains black belts in this form of advanced problem solving, as well as in the art of statistical reasoning. The improvement of critical to quality characteristics requires more than just brains and experience. It requires mind tools, which provide the edge in real life. When this kind of knowledge is paired with the breakthrough strategy, breakthrough can take place individually and collectively. To improve the capability of any given critical-to-quality characteristic, it is important to understand it and define its performance objectives. This means that black belts must 1. Define the critical-to-quality characteristic scale of measure, for instance, inches, millimeters, grams, pounds, etc. 2. Identify and assess performance standards. And 3. Establish what parameters must change and the extent that they need to change in order to achieve the desired goal. These steps help black belts translate the practical problems of improving critical-to-quality characteristic capability into a statistical problem. By doing this, a black belt can change the process and the critical-to-quality characteristics by specific amounts. Next, black belts identify the potential sources of variation in a process that can impact the critical-to-quality characteristics parameters. Following this, the black belt can begin to study the critical-to-quality characteristics mean and standard deviation over a limited period of time, looking for trends and patterns. Black belts next conduct a variable search to confirm or deny the original list of variables that they believed could exert influence using statistical and logic-based tools such as design of experiments. In general, design of experiments guides the manipulation of the selected variables through a mathematically prescribed series of test conditions that measure the resulting data. Using the results of this statistical analysis, black belts are able to make certain probability-based statements as to 1. Which variables exerted leverage over the critical-to-quality characteristics performance, and 2. Which direction the key variables must be manipulated to create the desired change in the critical-to-quality characteristics parameters. Once black belts have identified the key process variables and know which direction to twist their respective knobs, they can set the tolerances for these variables. In other words, they can establish new operating specifications. You must now control the key process variables. Once the process has been improved, black belts must implement measures that will control the key variables within their operating limits over time. The idea of controlling processes has been around as long as the concept of a process. However, the way processes are improved and controlled has evolved in terms of thinking and technology. Unfortunately, many organizations think that they are controlling their processes, when in reality, they are actually only monitoring their process outcomes, as is the case with a commonly used monitoring system known as statistical process control. This was originally created to exploit the power of a priori control. Unfortunately, most organizations today confuse statistical process monitoring with statistical process control, inadvertently focusing on control after the fact rather than control before the fact. Next, standardize the methods that produce best-in-class process performance. After black belts have improved the capability of the target critical-to-quality characteristics and achieved their Six Sigma project goals, they must also promote and standardize those Six Sigma methods which produced optimum results. We must also standardize the optimized processes that result in best-in-class performance. Standardizing best-in-class performance is vital to many business goals and objectives. For example, 12 different ways of accomplishing a certain task may be effective, but not always efficient. By measuring and characterizing the 12 ways of completing a task, those that show high capability potential can be optimized, and then the vital few can be standardized. Doing this creates not only savings, but higher levels of efficiency. And finally, integrate standard methods and processes into the design cycle. Sometimes engineers feel that they need to create new processes for every new design or evolution of an existing design. Not only is this costly, but it's inefficient. Often it's easier and more productive to make changes to the design itself than to make equivalent changes in the processes. One of the key principles of design for Six Sigma is that it makes use of existing components, processes, and practices that have proven to be best in class. Understanding this makes it important for the executive leadership to reevaluate how they recognize and reward their design engineers. Often design engineers are rewarded on product performance rather than product producibility. Prior to Six Sigma's implementation at Motorola, for example, an electrical design engineer's performance was based on how well the product operated. If the design was clever and the proof of principle evaluation was good, the engineer was a hero. However, if there were problems manufacturing the product, the manufacturing manager was in the hot seat, not the engineering manager. Following the implementation of Six Sigma, Motorola's executive leadership began to understand that in order for any engineer to be a hero, not only did the design need to be clever, but it had to have best-in-class performance, and it had to be manufacturable to the extent that production costs and manufacturing cycle time were minimized, all by virtue of the design configuration. Now, this may seem like a tall order, but it is achievable when the expectation and the right leadership is present. For any organization to achieve its goals and objectives, standardizing the performance of best-in-class processes is vital. This approach not only increases profitability, but promotes higher levels of overall efficiency. Let me sum up what I've been discussing. The key to institutionalizing Six Sigma is having the right people in place at the business, operations, and process levels of an organization to implement and deploy the breakthrough strategy. Unless Six Sigma is structured so that it's interwoven up and down the organization, the initiative will never gain the velocity and strength it needs to sustain itself. Companies that implement the breakthrough strategy at each level of the organization will see that as black belts improve processes, their efforts flow up to the operations level, where business unit managers see improvements in yield, which allows them to reduce labor and material costs. Improving the cost of quality at the operations level then flows up to the business level, where improvements in operating margins and overall profitability are seen. The Six Sigma breakthrough strategy fundamentally changes the way every level of a business is managed on a daily basis. As Six Sigma flows up and down and across organizations, those at the business level communicate with those at operation and process levels in new ways. Six Sigma offers companies a way to step back and look at themselves holistically and see how the collective results of many smaller projects affect the large, high-level processes that run the day-to-day business. As companies learn what kinds of measures and metrics are needed to improve their processes, they are able to gain new insights and develop new practices. In turn, these lessons learned can be standardized and subsequently integrated into management's thinking and the organization's intellectual capital. I'd like to give more time now to understanding how we measure performance on the Sigma scale. Let's start with a key distinction: sporadic versus persistent problems. Some defects that occur in the course of industrial processes or commercial processes are the result of sporadic or periodic flare-ups in a process that is otherwise maintained at some level of capability. While most processes function within an expected range, occasionally the production of a product or the execution of a commercial activity will depart from its usual performance and show up as a series of spikes on a defect chart. A process that is defective 2% of the time, but suddenly jumps to 5% at a given moment, can be considered sporadic and will undoubtedly trip a variety of alarms within the company. Managers will converge on the scene and assign a team to troubleshoot the problem until production or service returns to its normal 2% defect rate. Successfully troubleshooting sporadic problems, however, does not help to lower a company's defect average and raise its Sigma level. While most companies respond capably to sporadic problems, it is the persistent, chronic, and hidden problems that evade attention and erode profits. The breakthrough strategy is designed specifically to tackle persistent problems. Here's an example. Let's consider a persistent problem that is masked by a relatively low defect rate when compared with the overall rate of defects. Take an automobile manufacturing plant where engine blocks are built out of aluminum. By using aluminum rather than steel, the company is able to lower production costs and add less overall weight to the car, improving the consumer's gas mileage. Unfortunately, despite the aluminum engine's safety and durability, the company comes to realize that the aluminum blocks don't tolerate stress as well as the steel blocks did. Unbeknownst to the plant's engineers, microscopic fractures sometimes occur in the aluminum due to consistent contamination of trace elements. Over time, drivers who push their cars to the limit exacerbate the hidden flaws. Temperature and pressure also work to damage the aluminum and cause parts to break or wear prematurely. The cars with damaged engines are returned to dealerships for repair, which the company repairs under warranty, significantly eroding profits. Meanwhile, the company's engineers scratch their heads, unable to determine whether the problem lies with the engine's design, the materials used, or in the processes developed to build the engine. Many companies feel they have no choice but to tolerate a certain number of defect problems, particularly when the defect rate associated with the problem is well below the overall rate of defects. In this sense, the defects become hidden. Rather than redesign the product and/or process, they decide to treat the problem sporadically by fixing faulty products as they crop up. Six Sigma, on the other hand, helps companies strive to reduce the overall defect level so that virtually every problem buried within an industrial system or commercial system is exposed and corrected in a uniform manner. The fact is, most defects are persistent in nature. They are tenacious and covert, making them hard to identify and correct. They do not raise any alarms or sound any whistles. As a result, they are often factored in as part of the cost of doing business. Companies compensate by raising the price of their products to cover the cost of materials and labor used, knowing that their competitors are probably suffering similar losses. By tackling persistent problems with the breakthrough strategy, companies such as General Electric, Allied Signal, Polaroid, and Bombardier have achieved windfall savings totaling billions of dollars. What these companies discovered was that persistent problems were costing as much as 30% to 40% of annual sales and affecting the corporation's long-term viability. By applying the breakthrough strategy to persistent problems, they were able to reduce their annual costs by at least 6% without increasing sales at all. Persistent defects are usually caused by hidden design flaws, inadequate tolerances, inferior processes, poor vendor quality, lack of employee training, inadequate tool maintenance, employee carelessness, insufficient inspection feedback, and so on. Moreover, persistent problems can exist in products and services that do well in the marketplace, making management reluctant to allocate the time and resources needed to redesign the product. Sometimes management, not recognizing the true cost of such defects, assume that correcting or redesigning such processes would be uneconomical, or fail to see how they could make a profitable product even more profitable. In other instances, management isn't even aware that hidden persistent problems exist. Some companies believe that they can keep the lid on such persistent problems by simply holding materials, processes, and products to the company's specifications, and by keeping failure rates, customer complaints, warranty returns, and other external performance measures below preset levels. By maintaining the status quo on the cost of inspections, tests, scrap, rework, and other internal costs, they think they are doing the best that can be done. In other words, they tolerate persistent problems because they don't believe they can do better. But persistent problems are like a lingering cancer. Left alone, they can insidiously spread and potentially undermine an otherwise healthy company. Industrial and commercial problems rarely have equal impact. It's important to focus on processes that will simultaneously produce the greatest benefit to the bottom line and the customer. Companies that want to increase their quality and reduce defect levels should analyze performance patterns and trends to identify the few chronic processes that make up the bulk of a company's avoidable costs. The 18th century Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto, in studying the distribution of wealth in Europe, found that 80% of the wealth was held by 20% of the population. He went on to discover that the same 80-20 principle applied to a host of other things as well. 20% of a company's employees, for example, tend to contribute 80% of a company's revenues. 20% of a company's customers generate over 80% of the profits. Today, Pareto's law tells us that 80% of the defects will be traceable to 20% of the different types of defects that can occur. These types of defects that account for 80% of the defects produced are called the vital few, while the others are referred to as the trivial many. Given this, we can surely recognize that there is a Pareto distribution of sporadic problems. However, we must also realize there is a distribution of persistent problems. But it is the vital few persistent problems that cause the greatest headaches. Companies need to be able to pinpoint the vital few factors that generate the highest costs, then separate them from the trivial many, before deciding which processes would contribute the greatest savings from initiating the breakthrough strategy. By focusing on the vital few and avoiding those with lesser impact, companies can leverage this information to produce maximum results. One strength of the Six Sigma approach is that it recognizes and accounts for the fact that processes vary over time. Inevitably, when data about a process are gathered over a period of time, observers will see that the process does not always perform on target or within specified limits or boundaries. When discussing a critical-to-quality characteristic such as the length of time it takes to respond to a customer's phone inquiry, the maximum acceptable time to answer an inquiry becomes the upper specification limit. For some critical-to-quality characteristics, there might also be a minimum response time or lower specification limit. In the case of the telephone inquiry, a lower specification limit may be specified to ensure that adequate research time is given to getting the facts straight. In addition, there is usually a target time, a limit usually centered between the upper and lower specification limits, a bandwidth of acceptable performance. Owing to the natural sources of variation, we would expect a distribution within the design bandwidth of the length of time it takes to handle various calls. By comparing the actual process distribution spread with the limits allowed by the upper and lower specification, companies can quantitatively see how capable their processes are. As the process bandwidth narrows in relation to the design bandwidth, process capability increases. The reverse also holds true. Over time, the process bandwidth will increase in size due to process centering errors. In other words, over an extended period of time, the process center, or the average, may be on target. However, during any given interval of time, the process average will be off target for one reason or another. The aggregate effect of shifts in the process center will widen the process bandwidth. When this happens, the probability of seeing a defect jumps radically. In a nutshell, process centering errors over time degrade capability, which in turn increases the likelihood of defects. Consequently, yield drops and costs go up. The average time-to-time centering error for a typical process will average about 1.5 sigma. In other words, a 4 sigma process will normally shift and drift from its design target value by about 1.5 sigma over an extended period of time. For a typical process, this means that factoring in the shift and drift factor of 1.5 sigma divided by the existing sigma level, say 4.5 sigma, will equal 0.375. In other words, 38% of the inherent short-term capability is lost due to normal process centering errors that occur over time. This means that a process which measures at 4 sigma short-term capability actually runs at about 2.5 sigma over repeated cycles of the process. Years of theoretical and empirical research on this subject have proven this to be true. This amount of shift and drift is inevitable and has to be accounted for during the design cycle of the process, product, or service. So when companies claim that their processes are at 6 sigma, what they are really saying is that the short-term capability of their process is 6 sigma. The long-term performance, however, is 4.5 sigma because of process-centering errors. To cope with the phenomenon of shifts and drifts, any given design should be what we call robust to at least a 1.5 sigma shift in centering of all critical-to-quality characteristics, so as not to show any practical change in performance or yield. The methods used to accomplish this are incorporated in design for Six Sigma practices. The Six Sigma breakthrough strategy recognizes the importance of shift and drift and makes it possible to account for them when assessing process capability. In order to precisely represent the unknown distribution of a process and its output data, the total process variation is subdivided into short-term and long-term components. Sigma short-term is the metric for the effect of the trivial, while sigma long-term measures the effect of both the vital few and the trivial many. We also refer to this as discrete and continuous data. Imagine that you have just hired an architect to build a single-car garage. As the plans are being drawn up, the architect will have to make a decision on the width of the garage door opening. Considering the variation among car widths, a Cadillac or Lincoln Continental needs more room than a small sports car, the architect will need to design an opening wide enough to accommodate any size car while still providing enough support to the structure of the garage. One approach our architect could take is to measure every model of automobile and truck manufactured and take an average of vehicle widths. Or the architect could take into account only the widest vehicle manufactured and build the garage to accommodate that vehicle's width. Now picture a line drawn down the center of the garage, starting at the garage door and ending at the back wall. If we were to line up the center of our car exactly to the center line every time we drove into the garage, we would always have adequate room to get in and out of the garage. In fact, we've probably all seen garages with a tennis ball hanging from the ceiling to help the driver properly position the car. But regardless of how attentive our architect is in getting the garage door exactly the right width, no architect, regardless of experience and expertise, can control such factors as a 16-year-old boy who zips into the garage without giving much thought to the position of the car or the time the driver pulls into a garage late at night after having too much to drink. What the architect does know is that the driver will rarely drive the car exactly to the center of the garage. Therefore, the design must take into account operator error and create a wide enough margin so that neither the side of the car nor the walls of the garage are damaged. Essentially, what the architect is doing is allowing for shift and drift of the centering of the car as it is driven into and out of the garage. This analogy illustrates the importance of being able to compensate for the consequences associated with process centering. By offsetting normal distribution by a 1.5 standard deviation on either side, the adjustment takes into account what happens to every process over many cycles of manufacturing, or, in the case of our garage and car illustration, the many times the car will be driven into the garage. Simply put, accommodating shift and drift is our fudge factor, or a way to allow for unexpected errors or movement over time. Using 1.5 sigma as a standard deviation gives us a strong advantage in improving quality not only in industrial processes and designs, but in commercial processes as well. It also allows us to design products and services that are relatively impervious or robust to natural, unavoidable sources of variation in processes, components, and materials. The carpet example we used early on illustrates the difference between sigma levels and quality. By taking this carpet example a step further, we can show what a shift in the average means and how it relates to defects per million opportunities. Suppose the person cleaning the carpet showed up overly tired from a night of no sleep, and as a result was weaving the machinery across the floor instead of pushing it in a straight line. How much of the carpet do you suppose might not be cleaned because of this? If our carpet cleaner normally performed to 3 sigma level when well rested, we would expect to see about 100 square feet of soiled carpet when the job was completed, an area about the size of a second bedroom, rather than the area beneath a recliner chair. If we had hired an overly tired cleaner who normally performed to a 6 sigma level when well rested, we would expect to see a soiled area about the size of the base of a chair, rather than the area of the size of a pin. The 6 sigma process capability, in other words, allowed for very good cleaning performance in spite of the fact that lack of sleep was causing the process to weave a little.